The presidential election is still more than a year away, and Democratic candidates have already had four televised debates. It's left candidates balancing whether to go easy on each other or try to stand out by taking swipes at their fellow Democrats. That tension came up in this exchange between Pete Buttigieg and Julian Castro during last month's debate in Houston. This followed Castro questioning the memory of former Vice President Joe Biden.
This is why presidential debates are becoming unwatchable.
This
reminds everybody of what they cannot stand about Washington. Scoring points against each other, poking at each other, and telling each other that you're my plan, your plan. Look, we all
That's called a Democratic primary election.
That's
called an election. That's an election. You know, this is what we're here for. It's an election.
Our next guest says maybe it's time to try something different, and if debates don't change to reflect the current political climate, they risk becoming irrelevant. Amanda Ripley is a journalist and author and a senior fellow at the Emerson Collective. Her books include The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. She wrote a piece for The Washington Post about how we can redesign debates. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, as you watch these debates this year and maybe in years past, what is bugging you about them? What do you think they're getting wrong as a format?
Well, I've spent the past 2 years writing about polarization and conflict in the United States and around the world. And so when I tuned into the debates earlier this year, I had this really weird sensation. You know, I felt like I was like a space alien watching like a faraway culture trying to understand what this ritual was all about. Like, it just felt really anachronistic, like really like it hadn't kept up with the reality that we're dealing with. You know, I mean, politicians and the news media meet at debates, right? Like, that's the intersection of those two institutions, and they are both hugely distrusted by the American public at this point. And yet we're still running the debates the exact same way we did when the first one was televised in 1960. So you have these sort of self-serious moderators trolling for conflict, and the candidates have opening statements, and, you know, they're highly prepped and powdered. And it's a lost opportunity, I think, given the level of distrust and polarization in the country.
Yeah, there's this idea that, okay, candidates need to find that moment to stand out. And with social media now, that moment to go viral with that catchy line or that bold attack or that big back and forth. Is there just an incentive to go for something cheap and easy here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, you know, in journalists, like all people who tell stories, appreciate conflict. I mean, conflict is an essential part of a good story. That's just how the human brain works, right? What I would say is that the kind of conflict that they are provoking in the debates is a really kind of primitive, not very interesting conflict at this point. You know, it's just the kind of like, well, you know, he said that you want Medicare for all. What do you say to that? You know, and it's like, we get that all day long, right? We get that on social media, and we get it in the sort of clickbait news that we're subjected to. So it's not that interesting anymore to keep having, you know, CNN moderators poking the candidates and the candidates poking each other and trying to get them to get upset or say something. I mean, conflict is important, but I would argue there's like a deeper level of conflict that's more interesting than this kind of like very basic kind of primitive conflict.
We asked our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page what they thought about debates. Jonathan tells us anything that encourages grandstanding and zingers is just WWE style entertainment for their supporters. He's thinking along the same lines you are, I think, to an extent. But okay, how do we, let's say the moderators, the media who manage these things, how do they get something other than the grandstanding and the zingers that Jonathan is worried about?
Right. Like, it's easy to criticize, but then it's like, what are we going to do? I mean, we have to make this interesting. We got to fill this time. There's an awful lot of money and energy that goes into these things. So, you know, if we continue with the space alien metaphor, if you bear with me,
please
like
do.
If we came here from outer space and we were like, man, there's a lot of division and distrust in this society, and yet they have to elect a leader, and there are all these problems that just aren't getting solved, and like most Americans are super exhausted and burnt out on the whole thing. What would you do then? Like, if we, you know, think about it that way, like, how would you build debates from scratch if you recognize the situation that we're in and are not sort of living in denial about it? And I think the clear way, one clear way to build trust is to trust the voters, to just get really transparent and give up some of your control as the journalists and the politicians and say, you know, what do people care about most? What do voters care about? And then deliver on that. And so you see a little of that, right? Like voters repeatedly say in polls that they care a lot about healthcare, right? And every debate has really, you know, really kind of hammered on healthcare to the almost ad nauseum, right? But you know what else they say? 70% of Democratic voters say they want a candidate who can unite the country. That's not a narrow margin. And in the states with the earliest primaries, 2/3 say they want a nominee who would work with Republicans to get things done in office. But not a single question that I've seen in any of the debates has addressed this. And it doesn't have to be like soft, boring, squishy question, right? Like if you ask the candidates, look, this country is really historically unprecedented levels of division and people are upset about it. What are you going to do on day one to try to get things done in that climate, you know? And do you understand the other side even as you disagree with them? Do you have people on your staff who disagree with you? You know, tell me about one of the conversations or debates you've had with them recently. Like, can you hear both sides even as you hold on to your own beliefs?
Talking to Amanda Ripley about a piece she wrote in the Washington Post about debates. She says it's time for a rethinking, a redesign, or to try something new. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do presidential debates make a difference? Do you watch them? Do you like how they're done? Or do you think we need to change them? 800-642-1234. Amanda, in your piece, you throw out an interesting idea. Maybe we need something different than a debate, bringing candidates to a group of people who aren't their natural core supporters. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was thinking like it might be interesting to take candidates and put them in American homes, like, you know, literally take, you know, Elizabeth Warren and put her in a white Christian evangelical home in Tennessee, right? And she talks to the family and again, listens and tries to understand without letting go of her own core values. And you sort of see like who can talk to people without talking down to them, you know, who can be curious even as they disagree, because I think that's what's really what people are really yearning for. Like, I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone who says, you know what I want more of? What I want more of is argument. Like, I'm just not getting enough argument on TV these days. And so, you know, I think that would be more interesting, right? Is to say, look, okay, if this is a huge problem that we have, we are paralyzed by our divisions. Let's see someone try to deal with this differently. Let's see if someone, which of these candidates has the skills to make different kinds of people feel heard, even as they don't necessarily compromise on all their beliefs.
Well, I would suggest maybe there is one group that does want a particular kind of argument. Core supporters of Democrats and core supporters of Republicans want their candidates out there fighting in the mix, arguing with the other side, and they don't want that kind of compromise. They may not be the majority of the country. They probably aren't. But do you think that's part of what incentivizes, especially in the primary debate, this kind of conflict-oriented debate?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true and an important point to note. Like they're, you know, playing to the base. That's who comes to these debates, right? That's who watches them. And I guess I just would say I think it's short-sighted and old-fashioned. Like I don't think it's worth the damage it does to the majority of Americans to keep doing it this way just to appeal to your most kind of fervent, dogmatic believers. Because that's, you know, we're talking like 10%. Of voters. This is like the same people who are on Twitter. They are not representative of the country of Democratic voters. And so you're really playing to an extreme end. And you're right, the incentives are there to do that. But I would argue they're being really exploited by kind of a dated and not very creative format that is imposed on the process.
We're talking to journalist Amanda Ripley about the ways our presidential debates are failing, she says, to speak to our polarized political climate, to help bridge polarization of the country. And she has ideas on how to change them or maybe replace them. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you watch presidential debates? Do you like watching them? If you're a Democrat, what do you think of the way the debates have been done for this big cast of characters this time? Republicans, how about the 2016 packed field of Republicans? What did you think of those debates? Do you think something needs to change? Do you think it's too conflict-oriented, too theatrical? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Amanda Ripley about a piece she wrote in the Washington Post about debates, presidential debates, and what's wrong with them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If we asked you to design a presidential debate, what would be your priorities? And what do you want to hear from candidates in debates? How do you want to hear it? Argument, back and forth, one at a time, different settings. Call in now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think the word debate inherently means debate, and I think we should just heighten the level of debate we have. Bring it at least up to a high school debating team or a college debating society. What's happening now is all we have is people getting away with a couple second sound bites, just repeating the same tagline over and over again. And I don't think I would worry about people talking down to people. I want people to talk up for a change. I want them to increase their level of sophistication and get called out when they lie as well. Let's up the level of debate instead.
Tom, thanks for the call. Amanda, what do you think?
I think that's interesting. I mean, it is true that there are ways to have debates that are more interesting than what we're seeing. It's difficult to do, but not impossible. Just to be throw out a totally wacky idea, one interesting concept that I've heard about is called a reverse debate, where, you know, the candidates do their thing, they make their points, they argue, and then you literally switch places. And the person who wins is the one who most persuasively argues the other point of view, right? So that's hard to imagine for like a million reasons. But wouldn't it be interesting to see, and in fact, that's what high school debate teams mm-hmm. do, right? Like, you don't necessarily know which side you're going to be debating. You prepare both sides and you show up and you make the case. And that would reveal to us, like, which person actually does understand the other side, even as they disagree.
Thanks a lot for that call, Tom. We'll go to Madeline now in Green Bay. Madeline, hi.
Hi. I wish they would give them more time to fully explain what they're talking about. For example, they ask Elizabeth Warren, will you raise taxes to provide for health care? And her response was, I'm looking at the overall cost. Well, I wish they'd give her time to explain what that means. And, you know, raising your taxes is like a buzzword. And there's so much more involved than just, well, are you going to raise taxes? You know, you got all these paperwork with the insurance companies and there's billions of dollars goes into that.
Gotcha, Madeline. Thanks a lot for the call. Amanda allowing more time for nuanced answers, she says, though, with so many candidates in this time around, that might be harder to do.
Yeah, and I think Madeline's pointing again to the sort of, you know, predictable, boring, superficial level that these debates tend to stay on, right? And there's different ways to kind of get deeper into more interesting territory. But, you know, journalists, including myself, have not traditionally been trained in those ways. You know, I did a lot of conflict mediation for the work I'm doing now. And I learned that there are different questions you can ask to get a little deeper, to get more nuance. Otherwise, you do just end up with these talking points back and forth, like watching a tennis match that never ends. I mean, I do think it's important to remember that 2/3 of Americans don't identify with either political extreme, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily looking for a moderate. And this is the distinction that, again, I don't think the debates have caught up with. So most Americans are open to a big change agenda, particularly on things like healthcare. But what they want first is a leader who understands them. Like, they don't actually trust politicians to solve their problems at this point. It's more like, do you even get what I'm talking about? Like Madeline was saying, like, do you even get all the paperwork and all the, like, do you get this? And that's the thing that the debates are not revealing.
What, you gave an example of a question earlier. What other kind of ways are there to ask those questions that hopefully provoke a deeper response?
You know, one thing that I think would be interesting would be to ask, you know, explain why someone might oppose gun control or abortion and still be a good person. Like, that would be a question for the Democratic candidates, right? This, again, it's uncomfortable, right? Because it goes against the grain. It goes against the incentives, as we talked about, to play to the base. But I think that's interesting conflict, right? When you make people uncomfortable to ask them a serious, meaningful question, not when you just kind of poke at them and try to provoke their anger. I think that's a question that, you know, can you think of solutions to these really hard issues so that neither side would necessarily have to compromise their core beliefs? Like, how creative are you in thinking about this, or do you just want to win?
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Amanda Ripley about presidential debates and how to make them better. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Nakusa. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I guess I'd just kind of qualify what I'm going to say by saying that, you know, I think the American public is just probably not as interested in debates than it used to be, just given the political division between parties and within parties. I know that talking to people that I know, you know, people are just generally fed up. But, you know, I guess one idea I had is that I think the American public would actually do a better job designing debates and questions. So if you had focus groups prior to the debates that would focus in on issues that matter to the American public. And then perhaps out of that could be some issues and then questions that could be recommended to the moderators. I think politicians, and you see it in debates and you see it every day, are less interested in what we want as American people than what they want. And it's time that, you know, I think the American public would have some power and control in helping to design debates.
Tom, that's really interesting. Thanks for that call. What do you think about that idea, Amanda?
I think I totally agree with Tom. I vote for Tom for president. Like, that's I totally agree because, you know, I mean, if we go back to this fundamental crisis of confidence, of faith in our institutions, right? If we know that the government and the news media are not trusted, well, one way to get people to trust you is to trust them first. So hand over the wheel, like you give, within reason, right? Give voters, give the public more control over the process. And I agree. I think there's you know, millions and millions of creative, reasonable, informed Americans who are just totally tuned out of politics right now and of the debates in particular.
Tom, thanks for the call. Karen joins us next in Galena. Karen, hello.
Hello. I agree with the woman just said, and I'm calling because I'm 75 years old. And when I was younger, the League of Women Voters hosted the debates, and they were genuine debates. We do not have debates now. They would ask serious questions and on serious issues that the country really needed to know about. And now we have these TV news anchors, and they're asking the same kind of questions and doing the same thing that they do on their news show. They're just pitting one candidate against the other candidate. Just, you know, they want ratings, and that's what they're used to, asking them things like that. But it's not a debate. And my suggestion would to get the League of Women Voters back in and run the debate and run a real debate.
Karen, thanks a lot for that call. Amanda, go back to the League of Women Voters.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of like looking to our civic institutions, which we know are like kind of frayed, but really important. Are there institutions, you know, the YMCA, the Rotary Clubs, you know, churches, mosques, synagogues, like are there institutions that might help us with this in a way that maybe they used to many years ago? I mean, I think if you can find ways to get trusted institutions back into the process, as well as regular voters, then you're going to go a long way to restoring the American public's faith in the process. But also, it's just going to make it more interesting. Like, my number one criticism is that this is just not interesting or helpful.
Thanks a lot for that call. Jim joins us next in Madison. Jim, hi.
Hello.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, I think no matter how you structure the debates, I think the whole process is so long that people are people are fatigued, as has been mentioned. It's been nearly, we'll have nearly 2 years of an election cycle running, and it just promotes more and more division when the same people that are out debating one another and trying to score points go back to Washington and try to govern by doing the same thing. We have elections that last probably an immense amount of time, more than any of the other civilized democracy.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. That brings up a whole another issue, Amanda. But do you think there's part of, that's part of it, the fatigue and attrition that comes along with our, by world standards, really long election process?
I mean, I think that's a really good point. Like, there's a much bigger problem here, which is that, you know, people feel like our system is rigged, and it is. I mean, we have handed over too much of our election process to big moneyed interests. And all Americans, I think most Americans know that, understand that, feel that viscerally. And one of the outcomes of that is the length and the spectacle and the just sort of soul-crushing tenor, relentless tone of the campaigns. And it's true that, you know, I talked to some journalists from other countries when I was working on this piece, and I was like, you know, what do you guys do? Do you have a creative like way of doing primary debates? You know, I'm looking for creative solutions. And they were like, you know, we don't, we only have like a month for the whole campaign. So this is a non-issue, you know? So we are unusual in this respect. And I think it's certainly a reform that, that most Americans would welcome if there was a limit on campaigning.
Briefly, Amanda, for a change to debates, probably the politicians aren't going to make this happen. The media might not. Do you think that the public can demand a change?
It's a good question. I mean, we've got another debate coming up on November 20th. I suspect we'll see the ratings fall again. That's in Atlanta. And, you know, I just wonder, could some other organization come around and propose something radically different and much more compelling and convince the candidates to do it, you know? And then you could see, you kind of have to prove, you know, with any institution that's kind of coasting along, like TV news and politicians, you have to show them that it's possible to do something totally different and succeed. And then they will do it, right? But you're going to have to, I think, show them, because they're happy to just continue on with the legacy ways of doing things.
Thanks to Amanda for joining us. That's Amanda Ripley. You can share your thoughts on debates on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.